Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empty Business Radio, where we do your life, your business, your way. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the Chief Executive Indy, and I'm so excited to have you here on Monday, April the 9th, 2007. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale. If you are in the cosmetics business, Essential Wholesale can help you get started or grow your existing indie beauty business. They are manufacturers of one of the largest selections of natural and organic cosmetic bases in the world. Plus, they offer a variety of consulting services to help you expand your brand. Visit EssentialWholesale.com today for details. Well, here we are, the week before April 15th, the dreaded tax deadline. But this year, we all get an extra few days because April 15th falls on a Sunday, and April 16th, I think, is a federal holiday. So everybody gets a couple of extra days this year. And that's good news. But, you know, I recently read a survey indicating that of all the regulatory requirements that small businesses have to follow, the federal and state tax burden causes the greatest degree of difficulty and anxiety. It seems like there are so many quirks and nuances that it's nearly impossible for small business owners to wrap their arms around them just to understand them, much less comply with them. For this reason, I always recommend that the first professional you hire as a small business owner, no matter how small your venture is a financial professional with the appropriate certifications to help you track your expenses, income, profit, and, yes, your taxes. And today, to help us do that is Tom O'Connor. Tom is a certified public accountant and the managing member of Thomas O'Connor CPA LLC, a Maryland company that helps small businesses of all shapes and sizes to keep track of those expenses and make the most of the tax filing season if that's possible. Tom has about 20 years of experience as a CPA, and his extensive experience with small business owners has uniquely equipped him to help people just like you, all you indies out there, and me, to deal with taxes in an efficient and cost-effective manner. Tom, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Donna Maria. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's really nice to have you here. Now, we have a lot of information that we need to cover, but first, you know, Tom, I like to give my indie business listeners out there an idea of who my guest is, because all my guests are independent business owners. So can you share a little bit, Tom, about how you moved from traditional employment to having your own business?
Well, it's interesting. I first started out many years ago. Let's see. I got out of the University of Maryland in 1983, and I started working for a small public accounting firm in 1983. I stayed there for a couple of years, and then I went into private business. I was a controller and CFO for several small companies, and along the way, after I passed the CPA exam, I started building independent clientele to do tax returns for. And when I left my, I decided to leave my last controller job, as well as actually CFO job, because I had over 100 clients, individual clients, and some business clients. And I also, my wife and I have a young daughter. She's only 6, and they tell everybody she's 6 going on 26 right now.
Of course, aren't they all?
Exactly. And so I decided, my wife and I made a decision that we were going to, you know, we would really prefer to, even though we both were going to work, one of us should probably work from home. And the best person to be able to work from home was me, because my particular experience and my particular job lent itself to being able to work from home. So I walked away from my last job with, like I said, about over 100 clients at that point. And I just walked away and said, you know, it's time to start my own business. And so I did in February of, I believe it was 2003,
mm-hmm.
I started working for myself officially.
Mm-hmm.
And haven't looked back.
Mm-hmm.
Some days are better than others, I have to admit.
Yeah. Well, that's always the case. Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, that's a great way for people to kind of warm up to how it is that you got here. And I love that, you know, it's a really good example of how a family got together and put their heads together to, you know, be more available to the children and all that stuff. So we got to have you on the show when we do a show on dads who work from home, but we'll get to that later. Today it's all about the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, let's get started by talking about the types of tax filers that exist. And, of course, we've got state and federal. So let's just kind of stick with federal so we can cover most of the people listening, since the states vary so much. What are the types of tax filers where businesses are concerned?
Well, there are several types of tax filers as far as businesses go, and they range from a small independent business that's a sole proprietorship, what's known as a sole proprietorship, and their personal return, they file the Form 1040, and with that, they also file a Schedule C.
Mm-hmm.
There are now, there are also other types of filers, such as for businesses, such as corporations,
mm-hmm.
and there's several, there's a couple of classes of corporations. There's a new type of corporation. It's not really new. It's been around for a few years, but a lot of accountants and tax lawyers, certainly such as myself, we recommend that in many cases to people for various reasons. That's called an LLC, and that's known as a limited liability company.
Okay.
Many states have those. And that is that can also be, if you have a single member limited liability company, you also file a Schedule C.
Mm-hmm.
There's also partnerships. That would be if you have two or more of you in business together, you could file as a partnership,
mm-hmm.
or you could be a limited liability company that files a partnership return, and that would be a Form 1065.
Would be, Tom, if you have more than one person in the LLC?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Right. And that also, you could either file as an LLC. You have to elect that, of course, but you have to. You could either file as an LLC or you could be a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
But we call a limited liability partnership too. There are those that exist, but there are limited liability companies that have two or more people that file the partnership return. And then there is what's known as a C corporation, which is a regular corporation,
mm-hmm.
and that is the regular corporation. I tell people this, that most likely the regular corporation you're going to find is the kind of company that's listed on the stock exchanges. Those are the big companies, and they have to file in most cases, not all, but in most cases, they would be a C corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires an 1120, mm-hmm. Form 1120 return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also something called an S corporation. And an S corporation is what's known as a subchapter S corporation. And there are many small independent businesses that file what's the 1120S, which is the S corporation tax return. So as you can see, there's several different ways to
Let's break it down and let's limit it to three of them, probably
okay.
The three that I think are most relevant for our listeners today, sure. And that would be sole proprietorship, LLC, and the S corp.
That'd be fine.
And that way we can, I think, pretty much cover most of the indie business listeners who email me and call me and stuff with questions. So let's first begin with the deadline for each of these entities. Are they the same or different? Again, we're talking about federal.
Right. The federal deadline is traditionally for 1040 filers with a Schedule C, for example, a sole proprietorship would be the 15th of April. As you alluded to, this year it's the 17th of April, and that rarely happens, but it's happened this year because one of the issues is that in Massachusetts it's actually a state holiday, which is a major service center is located in Andover, Massachusetts.
Oh.
So that's the reason why it's they've extended the deadline to April 17th. Last year they did the same thing, and it caused a lot of confusion. But the normal traditional deadline is April 15th. So if you're
a sole proprietorship filing a 1040 and a Schedule C, you have till April 17th this year. Is it the same for an LLC filing a Schedule C?
That would be correct, yes.
And
yes.
What about corporations?
Corporations are traditionally the 15th of March.
Okay.
Okay, and that would be your 1120 S returns, mm-hmm. and the partnership return is actually also something that is due April 15th as well.
Okay, so you have an earlier deadline for your S corporation, and
yes.
For those of you who have who have S corporations. Hopefully, you got to listen to a show like this last month.
or you missed the deadline, you know.
Yeah, the deadline's passed, but we'll still be able to help S-Corp people, but we'll focus again on S-Corp, sole proprietorships, and LLC. So we've got our deadlines in place, and, you know, it's obviously close to the deadline. So can you share some tips on getting an extension of time if you find yourself stuck and not able to finish everything by the deadline, Tom?
Sure. The form that you need to fill out for an extension is a Form 4868. Now, the IRS has relaxed its rules over the last few years regarding Form 4868. If you owe money on your tax return, you are required to pay that money at the time of your extension is due.
And is the deadline for filing an extension the same as the extended deadlines we talked about earlier?
Yes. It would be this year, April 17th.
But you have to pay your money, huh?
You have to pay your money because what I'm going to tell people is this. If you do not pay, the interest and penalties that are associated with any tax due run from the time of April 17th, in this case, this year, until you pay the money. So your extension of time allows you to go now until October 15th to file your tax return. Traditionally, it was a 4-month extension, but now it's a 6-month extension. And if you do not pay until October 15th, if you owe money, you run the risk of penalties and interest for 6 months.
So does that mean, Tom, that you pay the penalty or you will owe the penalties or interest, but if you file the extension on time, you don't have a late filing fee?
Only if you pay the tax that's due.
Oh, okay. Wow.
If you do not pay the tax due, then you will be hit with penalties and interest. If you are receiving a refund, this discussion is absolutely irrelevant because there's, you know, the IRS is, and actually the federal government is more than happy to keep your money for the next 6 months.
Yeah, you don't get any interest on that, do you?
No, you don't.
Funny how that works.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. So we've got our entities and our deadlines and stuff down. Now, let's kind of get a little bit into the nitty-gritty of what sorts of things we can look for at this date to maximize or minimize our tax burden. Are there any deductions that you can share with us that small business owners have that they might overlook, like, you know, things like startup costs and education costs, things of that nature?
Well, a lot of small business owners, certainly, I'm going to make this recommendation right up front. If you are a small business owner, you really do need to have an accountant. You really do need to have a certified public accountant who specializes in tax returns, or an enrolled agent, what's known as an EA, who is someone who has passed the test the IRS has, that is important. Yeah. These people are also important, too. And they can also specialize in preparing your personal and corporate tax returns. The reason I say this is because there's so many tricky things that people don't realize. When people start up a business, for example, they believe that all those expenses that they've incurred to start up their business, such as they purchase lots of office equipment, $5,000 worth of office equipment, or they have startup expenses such as legal fees to start the business. In some cases, a lot of those expenses are not deductible until you begin operation of the business. So if you start your business at the end of November, for example, and don't really transact any business, or for that matter, you just have these startup costs, but you have not put the business plan into motion until the next year, in this case, let's say 2006 to 2007, those costs are not deductible in the year that you started.
So you could deduct them on this year's taxes when you file next year?
Yes, that'd be correct.
Okay. Well, that's a really good place to start. We're going to go to our first break and come back and talk with certified public accountant Tom O'Connor. He's sharing tips and helpful information for small business owners to meet their tax filing obligations this year. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We are here this afternoon talking with certified public accountant Tom O'Connor. I hope that you'll call in your question or comment. Do you have an issue that's come up at the last minute where your taxes are concerned and you need some professional suggestions for how to handle that? This is a great place to get that. Our toll-free caller number is 800-773-0355. That's 800-773-0355. Or if you can't get to the phone for some reason right now, you can email your question to me at Donna Maria at IndieBeauty.com. Tom, before we left, we talked about deducting startup costs. Now let's talk about a couple of other things that I know indie business owners are dealing with out there in terms of deductions that people may not know about. Let's first talk about equipment deductions. A lot of my listeners are manufacturers of products and they have machinery that they use to do that. How do we address equipment deductions, Tom?
Well, equipment deductions, especially for small business owners, you want to avail yourself as much as you can to what's called a Section 179 deduction, where you are allowed to take in the first year the entire amount of depreciation that you would take on a piece of equipment over the years. So let's say you have a five-year piece of equipment that costs you $5,000. You can deduct all that $5,000 right up front as opposed to $1,000 a year. Whereas that depends on your situation. Everybody's situation is different. And there are traps and that type of thing with the Section 179 deduction that you need to be aware of. So this is why when I was, before the break, I was suggesting that people who do have a business really should hire an accountant in order to help them jump through these hurdles. But the Section 179 expense is something that is definitely available to people who do purchase equipment, and it is a good write-off. It was certainly something that was accelerated in recent tax codes to encourage investment, especially after the terrorist attacks of September 11th.
Mm.
In order to keep the economy moving, a lot of those deductions were accelerated for companies. They raised limits and that type of thing. So it certainly is something that small businesses should avail themselves to.
Yeah, and I talk with a lot of people who are manufacturers, and it is kind of confusing, so I appreciate your reminder to get some professional help. But that equipment deduction, as you say, is oftentimes overlooked. Now, what about education deductions? Like, what sorts of things can a small business owner deduct in that area?
Well, education expenses are certainly something that are deductible. And what we're talking about is you are currently in a field, a business, then any expenses to continue your education. And we're not talking about, for example, if you are a makeup manufacturer and you decide that you've had it with doing makeup manufacturing and you want to become a chef, if you take educational courses to become a chef, that's not deductible. That's
what if you've already started your cooking business?
Huh?
What if you've already started your cooking business and you're doing both? Can you then take a deduction if you have a legitimate cooking business and a makeup business at the same time?
Oh, sure, yes. That obviously, of course, depends on the situation. But
Right.
But again, you certainly, if you're going into a new field, a new line of work, those type of educational expenses are not deductible. But if you are going to take a course on the trends and the latest things, for example, the latest schooling in the types of compounds or the type of minerals that are being used in
mm-hmm.
manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
And also testing of new products, and you know, you're taking courses on those. Those are certainly deductible.
And if you're taking a course, like for example, if you offered a course on how to do your own taxes, small business owners could deduct that too if they were using it to prepare their taxes.
That would be correct, yes.
And how about conferences, Tom? Say, for example, there's obviously if it's a makeup conference and you're a makeup manufacturer, it sounds like it would fall generally into the description you just described.
And that is correct.
What if it's a small business conference? Like maybe you might be speaking at a conference on doing taxes, and there may be another expert there on providing legal assistance, another expert on, you know, how to build a great website in your business. Can you deduct those educational costs or, like, the cost of the conference?
Those would be deductible in most cases, yes, those particular expenses, as long as they are related to your endeavors as a small business person or as a makeup manufacturer or, you know, in whatever type of business. I'll give a good example real quick. As a CPA, I'm required to have 40 hours of continuing education annually by the state of Maryland. And anyway, I meet those requirements by taking continuing education courses, which are fully deductible to my business. So as long as it's something that's related to your business, then it is something that you can deduct. There is some traps to that, but the bottom line answer is, in most cases, those are things that you could see a benefit from to reduce and minimize your tax liability.
And Tom, how about things like professional organization dues or even subscriptions to publications in your area of business, like trade publications in the makeup arena?
Oh, sure.
Are those two things generally deductible as well?
Yes, those are deductible as well.
Now, how about travel? Let's say you go to a conference and you have to fly to get there and you have to get a hotel and you have to eat food and, you know, you may have some sundry telephone expenses, you know, when you dial out in your room, or maybe an internet access expense that you have to pay while you're at the conference. How can small business owners look at those in terms of using them as deductions?
Okay, well, all of those that you alluded to are deductible expenses related to traveling to conferences and you know, your hotel, and mm-hmm. the meals are a totally separate issue.
But, okay, let's talk about meals then.
Meals are, in most cases, only 50% deductible.
So they want us to get educated, but they don't want us to eat.
No, basically. No, really what it amounts to is that if it's something that is a something that's, you know, you go to McDonald's or you go, you know, the mm-hmm. odds are that your trip to McDonald's for your $5 Happy Meal or whatever you're going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I only know about Happy Meals because I have a 6-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that only in most cases 50% is deductible. It just depends.
Well, that's good to know. At least you can get some of it. And I would suspect, correct me if I'm wrong, that if the conference you're going to includes your meals, then you don't even have to worry about it. It's just still a deductible conference expense. Is that right?
That would be correct for the most part, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You might not have to separate that out. Now, what about the travel?
The travel is deductible from the conference.
Okay. So you can cover your taxi ride to the airport, your taxi ride from your conference city to the conference destination, and then obviously the return trip. All that stuff, things not to forget about when you're keeping your receipts, right?
That is correct, yes. Yeah, you can deduct those items, traveling to and from the conference,
mm-hmm.
your airfare.
Mm-hmm.
Be wary of, if you bring your spouse, that those costs are generally not deductible items. If you bring your spouse mm-hmm. and your kids, and you're going, let's say you're going to a conference at Disney World, okay, and you travel with your spouse and your children, generally the cost of the spouse and the children are not deductible at all.
Now, what if your spouse works for you, or you guys own the business together, and your spouse is also attending the conference? That would be different, right?
That would be a different situation, yes,
okay,
entirely.
So you just have to take the kids out of the picture in that sense. And
definitely, yeah. I mean, there's
for Mickey Mouse.
Right, exactly. A lot of people stretch that. They say, well, my spouse had to come with me in order to babysit the children. Well, how come they didn't stay home,
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting issue, and a lot of people these days are you know, legitimately employing their spouses so that they can take advantage of some of these benefits. So that's something for everyone to keep in mind out there. Tom, what about your services would be deductible as well? Like if someone had used you or an attorney or another professional person to help them in their business, those fees are deductible. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes, for the most part, professional fees such as a lawyer and accountant's fees in order to help you with your business and writing legal documents, for example, for a lawyer's fees or preparation of income tax returns charged by your accountant. Now, keep in mind that if you are an independent business, for example, on Schedule C, if your accountant prepares your Schedule C and also your personal tax return, the portion that is dedicated to the personal return is not deducted on your Schedule C. It's deducted on Schedule A.
Right.
So you need to keep that in mind. More often than not, if you are an independent business, then most of the work is going to go into the Schedule C. There's going to be some that goes towards the personal part, but not as much as would be if you were not self-employed. But
and this brings up an interesting point, too, Tom, and that is the requirement to really, from the very beginning of your business, keep your business and personal financial interests separate, right?
That is correct, yes. Whenever anyone starts an independent business and they come into my office and they want to talk about issues relating to starting that independent business, one of the first things I encourage them, besides trying to decide on what form of organization that they are going to take, such as the LLC, sole proprietorship, or S-corporation, is open up a checking account. Open up a separate bank account to keep your receipts, your business receipts, and your personal expenses separate.
I have a question about that, too. If you've done all that and you have a business credit card that you reserve specifically for business expenses, Tom, do you have to actually keep those paper receipts, or is your credit card statement enough?
In most cases, the credit card statement is enough.
Because, you know, otherwise, Tom, it's like, you know, give me a break here.
Right, yeah.
I'm trying to keep track of everything. It's so difficult for small business owners. Do you know, as a professional CPA and a person that kind of runs in the financial circles, is the federal government looking at these kinds of tax burdens when they change regulations? How much attention do they actually pay to the burden on small business owners to keep track of all this?
Well, the burden of proof is on the taxpayer, the easiest way to say this. And to be honest with you, in some cases, the IRS, it depends on who you get. If you get audited, it really depends on the auditor themselves, that, you know, how much detail they're going to be looking for. In most cases, I ask clients to provide the credit card statement, and if they have the credit card receipt, for example, on a meal expense where they want to take the 50% deduction, I usually tell them to try to keep those as best they can and make notes on what on the receipt, that who they had lunch with, et cetera, and what the conversation was, just to have backup, because the burden of proof is on the taxpayer. But in most cases, you know, the 50% deduction, depending on the agent, of course, would be, they would allow it, but, you know, you can't get overzealous. I mean, if you spend $10,000 on meals and entertainment but generate no business, then the odds that you're going to be allowed to fly with that are slim to many cases.
And when you say fly with that, do you mean in the event that you're audited? Is there any other way that some of these issues could ever come up other than an audit?
In most cases, they only come up between you and your tax preparer and or your conscience. If you get audited, your best defense is your backup documentation. And more often than not, you don't have to worry about it if, you know, you don't you aren't audited. So
audited, how long after a tax year does the federal government have to audit you? Is it like an unlimited statute of limitations, or is there a deadline?
No, there's a deadline for that. There's a 3-year deadline, except in the cases of fraud where it can be unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
If you fail to file a return, there is no statute of limitations. So if you must file a return, if you have not filed a return, let's say you go back to, you haven't filed a return since 2000, you need to file a return for 2000 and let's say 2001, etc. But for the most part, in this case, the 3-year statute of limitations runs, so there is a 3-year statute of limitations for the IRS to audit you.
And what do you count back to? Do you count back to, let's say you didn't file in 2000 and you do file this year? Is it 3 years from 2000 or 3 years from when you file this year?
No, it would be unlimited as far as 2000. You would still be required to file the 2000 return. If you file your 2006 return on April 15, 2007, the statute of limitations would expire 3 years from now, which would be April 15th, 2010.
Okay, so it runs 3 years from the date you actually make the filing unless there's fraud.
Yes.
Well, that's good to know, 3 years. But, you know, my brother was audited a few years ago, and it was just an absolute nightmare. So,
Again,
this brings up another vote for engaging the services of someone such as yourself, because if you are audited, then you've got good defense options. If someone like you prepared the taxes and they have all the records and can help you with the audit, right?
Correct, yes. And as a matter of fact, I found over the years that a person who has engaged a preparer, a professional preparer, such as an enrolled agent or a CPA, usually, you know, depending on the issues, of course, and depending on several factors, usually the IRS is more than happy to be reasonable with, and it's been my experience, this, to be honest with you, I can't speak to other CPAs' experiences or EAs' experiences, but my experience has been that whenever I've spoken with the governmental bodies such as the IRS or in some cases the individual states, they are more than happy to talk to a preparer.
Good. That probably makes their job easier, too. We're going to go to our last break on today's show. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with professional certified financial accountant, certified public accountant, Tom O'Connor. He's sharing a boatload of helpful information in a snapshot kind of form. Tom, this is a lot of stuff we've been covering here, so I thank you for covering so many topics and answering my my questions so thoroughly as I'm firing them at you.
Oh, sure.
Those of you who are interested in learning more about Tom O'Connor's services, visit his website at www.taocpa.com, and TAO stands for his initials, which his name is Thomas A. O'Connor. So taocpa.com. You can get in touch with him. And, Tom, you said you were in Maryland, but you serve businesses across the country. Is that right?
Yes. I have clients in I won't say I have clients in all corners of the globe at this point, but I have clients who are as far west as Indiana, and I have clients from Canada, of all places.
And you're used to working with micro businesses, right? So really yes. Small companies like mine, for example.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
a lot of my
that are like one or two employees and are
right.
Really just, you know,
right.
Just you know, can barely write the tax text.
Yeah,
when
that's
the time
like,
comes. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I specialize in a lot of small businesses. I came from a small business background. I spent a lot of time in small corporations. Most employees I was ever really responsible for was approximately 30. So yeah, it's small business, and I like it that way because of the personal contact that you have with the owner.
Funny. It makes me think about, you know, with the tax deadline looming the way it is. I used to utilize the services of an enrolled agent, as you suggested, and I would walk into his office always. I was always, like, I had to be the latest client he ever had. I would walk in, and there was this sign on his door that said, "Your poor planning is not my emergency."
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I remember thinking, it was like a really good way to warn me that, you know, basically if I walked in on April 11th, there wasn't much he could do to help me.
Yeah, it's called an extension, you know. Like we discussed earlier, that, you know, a lot of preparers start preparing. I actually have to be honest, pretty much everybody who's in here now will get processed by April 17th. I can't make any guarantees for those who walk in the door starting tomorrow because it's 7 days and I've got, you know, at least 40, 45 returns that I have to process between now and April 17th. It doesn't sound like a lot. I mean, I have friends who process easily over 1,000 returns during tax season.
Mm-hmm.
But for a one-person shop, you know, responsible from basically cradle to grave of tax preparation, it's it makes my life a little bit more difficult when I do have people walking in at the last moment. But
that includes people who want an extension, because an extension is not just filling out a page and signing it. You gotta get all the information together to do that.
Right. For the most part, yeah. I mean, there's a few people who I know that don't make enough money to even bother with filing the extension. We just let it go and then we file a return later. But more often than not, those who I know are going to owe money, you need to pay that money, as I mentioned earlier in the show.
Now let's just say you know you're going to owe money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to get everything together. Can you just kind of overpay and then do the actual nitty-gritty work afterward, and if you have overpaid, get a refund? And then if you haven't overpaid and you owe money, at least you owe less interest and penalties on it. Is that one strategy people might use?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, I encourage, for the most part, if I do prepare an extension for someone who owes money, I usually err on the side of caution and ask the client to add an additional maybe $100, $250, for example, to the amount, so that this way we do get a refund. Because there could be problems with the estimate. I mean, the estimates are, that's what they are. They're estimates. They're not exactly set in stone.
Right.
So, yeah, if you do that, that works out a lot. That works out very nicely, I have to admit.
Well, let's talk about a couple other things. I want you to share some information about people who are, you know, they've got their taxes filed and they're really looking for ways to minimize their tax burden for 2007. But before we get to that, I have a couple of questions about alternative ways for people to get their taxes done. Like, for example, people like you are pretty much booked for the rest of the week. What do you think of those tax preparation services, you know, in various strip malls and,
right.
and shopping center locations throughout the country where you can go in because they have so many people there. Nobody's really, you know, overwhelmed.
Right.
Maybe they are this week, but you know what I mean. You can go in and get someone assigned to help you. What do you think of those as kind of a last-minute resort for people who might be just, you know, really behind the eight ball now?
Well, interestingly enough, a couple of years ago I decided to drive by the local, one of the local national chain franchises, and they have a couple of initials in front of them, so so you can guess who that is. But anyway, I drove by to just check it out for fun, and there was a line out the door of people trying to get their taxes prepared.
Wow.
So as far as the national chains go, some of the recently there was a case where a national chain where that owned several an owner who had several franchises was indicted on tax fraud. That's not to indict the whole industry of the national chains of tax preparers, but as I tell people who own an independent business, would you rather have someone who's been doing it many, many years, such as myself, or an enrolled agent, for example, or would you rather have somebody who just took the course that they offer preparing your return?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point, I guess. But for people who have 7 days left, it's better than nothing, I guess.
I'm sorry. What I was going to say real quickly is they do very, very well. Do not get me wrong. They do very, very well with a very simple, straightforward return because it's not really something like where you have simple W-2s, where you have employment, you know, you just have a regular day job, you maybe own a house. Those type of returns are extremely easy to process as long as there's no things like really extraneous stuff like Schedule E's and, you know, possibly alternative minimum tax issues. Stuff like that is usually well within their realm of being easy to do and something that I certainly would encourage most people to if they have a very simple return.
Mm-hmm.
I have to charge more than they do, so I try to encourage those who have really easy returns. Unless they want me to sign a return, that's fine by me, but I usually would encourage someone at this last minute that the local chain preparer that would be a good way to go, especially if you just don't have a complicated situation.
And how about some of the software programs out there, Tom, for people with very small businesses kind of just getting things off the ground? Those are pretty good to get started?
A lot of them are, but again, interestingly enough, I was on a tax discussion board earlier today where someone had asked a question about they were preparing their own return and they had a limited liability company and because it's the holiday weekend of Easter, two of us decided to be nice and answer the question. But for the most part, a person in that situation should probably hire a professional preparer as opposed to using things like Tax Cut or TurboTax, which are both very good programs for those who have a very simple return. The cost is minimal. And e-filings available. If you have a very simple return like W-2s and nothing really complicated, then those programs work just fine and, you know, you can go and spend the money and that's fine. But I find that most people actually, they spend that money but they still get nervous. So they call up their, you know, they call up their brother-in-law who happens to know an accountant such as myself. I do get those calls on occasion.
I bet you do.
You know, and I need my return reviewed. Okay, well, fine. Come on in, et cetera.
Right.
So.
Well, those are all really good, insightful tips. Now, let's talk in our final segment here a little bit about those people who are on top of things. They've gotten their taxes filed, and they're really looking for some clever ways to minimize their tax burden for 2007. Are there some particular programs that small business owners can use that you know of that can help them do that, like some kind of savings plans and things of that nature?
Well, I certainly definitely tell small business owners to avail themselves as best they can to saving for retirement. I realize that whether or not Social Security is going to be around in another, you know, 20 years is a discussion for another show, but the truth of the matter is it's best to save for your own retirement. And so if people avail themselves to what we call SEP plans, or simplified employee pensions, or a simple 401k, or an IRA, an individual retirement arrangement. Certainly, IRAs are good, but you can sock more money away if you're a small independent business owner if you have a SEP plan, a KEO plan, or a simple 401k.
And these are funds that you, as you say, sock in there, and the actual contributions are tax-deferred or deductible?
Yes, the individual contributions are tax-deferred, and they're what is listed as an adjustment to income. So they reduce the amount of taxable income you ultimately pay to the government.
And are there maximum or minimum contributions you have to make? Like if you only have a little bit of money to start, of course it's better to save something than to save nothing. So
right. There's no minimum contribution, for example, except if your broker requires a minimum contribution to be made, such as $1,000. I mean,
right,
you know, a lot
right.
of brokerages
right.
require you to pay a minimum fee. But for the maximum contributions have gone up over the years, and they're indexed for now inflation. And the best I can tell people, and it also depends on if you're over 50 as well. For example, IRA contribution limits through 2007 are $4,000 with what's known as a catch-up contribution of $1,000. So if you're over 50, you can make a $5,000 contribution to an IRA.
That's great. Where do we go, Tom? Is the best place for a small business owner to go to open one of these, the bank where their business account is, or what do you suggest?
Your bank, if you have a brokerage house that you go to, a lot of those banks and brokerage houses have, I'll just say this because it's the only name creeping into my head right now, but Charles Schwab, for example, they have that type of information.
Oh, great. That's really... really helpful. Well, Tom, we have covered a lot of ground today, and I certainly do appreciate your time, and I know listeners will. We are going to put this show up at our website at indiebeauty.com. Just click on the radio link, and you'll be able to download the show to your MP3 and listen to it wherever you are on your way to your tax preparer's office, or you can stream it directly from your desktop. And for those of you who'd like to get in touch with Tom, learn more about his services, and get him on your list of important people to know after tax season this year. He's a good one, I know from personal experience. You can reach him at www.taocpa.com. His email address is there, his telephone number is there, and he is really familiar with what us indies go through because he's one himself. So, Tom, thank you for joining us on the show today. It's been really, really great having you. For those of you out there, I know if you've got your taxes done, congratulations. If not, this is your last chance to get out there and wrap your hands around this stuff. And I do hope this show has helped you to do that today.
Thank you,
Great
Donna,
shows coming up here on Indie Business Radio in the future. On April 23rd, Janice Christie, the author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned, will be here. On April 30th, Christine Holbaum, a public relations consultant, is going to be here to help us put our public relations hats on and get some well-deserved media attention for our businesses. I hope you'll join us for those shows. In the meantime, visit indiebeauty.com and click on the radio link to listen to all my shows from 2007. This is Donna Maria, the Chief Executive Indie, signing off. See you next week, guys.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.